Welcome to A World Powerfully Transformed, a new podcast from Unity on Cape Cod. We are creating community, celebrating love, and transforming lives. In this special series, we will bring you exciting, positive spiritual teachings, as well as thought-provoking interviews with guests from a diverse spectrum of the greater community. Now let us join Reverend Tony for this week's presentation.
Welcome to the Unity on Cape Cod podcast. I'm Reverend Tony Cryer, the spiritual leader here at Unity on Cape Cod. We are part of Unity Worldwide Ministries, which has a vision of a world powerfully transformed by the growing movement of our shared spiritual awakening. Each week, I will be bringing you special guests, and we'll be talking about current issues and topics that are impacting our lives and how we can take a spiritual approach to transforming our world. So welcome, come on in. Welcome back, everyone, to A World Powerfully Transformed. Today we have a special guest, one of my favorite people in the whole world, my wife, Liliana Bejarano Cryer. Lily is a certified mindfulness instructor for both children and adults. She works here on the Cape with an organization called Calmer Choice, which goes into the schools. And she also is a certified TSM mindfulness instructor. That means trauma-sensitive mindfulness. And she's in the process of becoming a certified mindfulness coach. She's also the author of a children's book series called Sky the Skunk and Friends, A Mindful Adventure. Welcome to our show, Lily.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great. Great to have you here. You've been excited about something lately that you've been talking to me about quite a bit, and it's called self-compassion.
Yes. So as a part of our work, we teach courses, and we came across this new topic for me, which is called self-compassion, which at the beginning I had a completely misconception about it. And the more I go deep into it, I know what is the value and how important for us is to have self-compassion.
That's excellent. You know, I remember, you know, back in the 90s, listening to a musician called Jai Josephs, and he wrote a song called I Love Myself the Way I Am. And of course, here at Unity, we always used to say to our kids, we love you, we bless you, we behold the light in you, and we accept you just the way you are. Is that part of it, accepting yourself just the way you are?
Yes, absolutely. It's embracing yourself with kindness. And all of what I'm going to explain here comes from the research of Christine Neff. She is a doctor. She works in the University of Texas. And she has a very specific definition of self-compassion. And she explains it with three components. So the first one is self-kindness, which is as opposed to harsh criticism. So it's just giving yourself the same kind of encouragement, understanding, and empathy that you will give to a good friend of yours that is going through a rough time. But oftentimes what happens is that we use a language that is incredibly harsh on ourselves, that we wouldn't even dare to speak that way to someone that we don't like. So this part, this component is very important because it's reversing the patterns. And instead of being so hard and hard critic towards ourselves, is, hey, I'm going to give it the compassion that I would give to a good friend of mine.
That's incredible. I love that. We often talk in Unity about changing your self-talk, your inner dialogue. Is that what you're talking about here?
Yes. Yes. Sometimes we think that in order to motivate ourselves, we have to be our critic, our heart critic, so that will get us going. So you, so-and-so, go ahead and do this and do that. Because if I think that if I don't speak myself in that way, I will become lazy and self-indulgent. But this definition of self-compassion is actually reversing this. It's saying every time that you are criticizing yourself, you are actually starting a process in your system called the fight or flight, which is preparing you to fight. It is preparing you to defend yourself in a physical threat setting. But nowadays, we are not going through physical threats as much as we used to do in old times. But what is threatened right now is our self-concept. So in these cases, as we criticize ourselves, we become our worst enemy because we are the attacker and we are the attack as well.
Mm-hmm.
And as this fight or flight response occurring in our system, we are getting invaded by all these stress hormones like the adrenaline and cortisol, which over time can be very damaging for our health.
Mm-hmm. I think, is there an aspect of this that if we are criticizing ourselves, eventually we're going to start criticizing and judging others, and that will be played out in our world?
Yes. Yes. So she speaks also a lot about the self-esteem versus self-compassion.
Kristen Neff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what she explains is that self-esteem is the evaluation, the global evaluation of self-worth. So am I a good person or am I a bad person? So, of course, if you have low self-esteem, that's not going to be good. You're going to end up anxious and depressed. And if you are so depressed, you can lead to suicide as well. So it's definitely not good to have low self-esteem. But having high levels of self-esteem can be also problematic, because it's not if you have it, but how you get it. So in this American society, you get high self-esteem by feeling special and above average.
Mm-hmm.
So can you just imagine if all of us, in order to feel good with ourselves, have to feel above average? So is that even logical? Is that even possible if everyone has to be above average?
Right, then there'll be no average.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all of this creates a dysfunctional dynamics in our society, because in order to feel good about myself, I have to put you down. I have to feel better than you. And this has actually created, according to Kristen Neff, a narcissist epidemic.
Wow. Yeah, you can see it being played out in the world today.
Yes, and they had a research that were tracking college students for 25 years, and the levels of narcissism have spiked.
So this kind of interesting way of developing self-esteem is actually very self-deprecating in the end. If you're trying to be better than other people, you're first judging yourself as not good enough to start with.
Yeah, so this self-esteem is contingent on success. So we feel good about ourselves when we succeed in those domains that are important to us. But if we fail to meet the ideal standards, we feel terrible about ourselves. So the question is, how do we get off this treadmill that in order to feel good about myself, I have to be special and I have to be above average? So in her research, the answer was self-compassion. So she found out that it will give you the same benefits of self-esteem without the downfalls.
Excellent.
So at the beginning, we were talking about her definition of self-compassion. So the first component that she was explaining was the self-kindness. So it's basically treating yourself like if you were a good friend of yours, like if you really like yourself, like if you are able to give compassion to yourself. But the second one is common humanity. So self-esteem asks, how am I different to others? So how I stand out.
Right.
But self-compassion asks, how am I the same as others? What does that mean to be human?
Brilliant.
And it's accepting ourselves with all our flaws, with all our imperfections. Instead of thinking, why is this happening to me? Because here comes the self-pity part that some people confuse self-compassion with self-pity, which is completely the opposite. So in self-pity, you're feeling special, like this is happening only to me. Why this is happening to me? But self-compassion is telling you, that is happening to you because you are human and you are connected with humanity, and that is what happens.
Right. We have
things
feelings.
Happens.
Yeah.
We have feelings. Things go bad sometimes. So when we feel separated psychologically, that can be very damaging because it can be we make it much worse by feeling isolated in our imperfections instead of embracing it as a normal part of our lives.
Oh, this is great. What I hear you saying, Lily, is that this old version of self-esteem actually isolates us, separates us from each other, and self-compassion connects us to each other.
Exactly. It's looking at our common humanity instead of how can I stand out from the crowd and be special.
Excellent.
So the third component of self-esteem, according to Kristen Neff, is mindfulness. It's how can I be with whatever it is happening to me in this moment, in this present moment, is acknowledging and validating, accept the fact that we are suffering in this moment. Because if we acknowledge that we are suffering, we can give ourselves the compassion we need.
Mm-hmm. And we can heal from that suffering.
Exactly. But sometimes we don't even notice that we are suffering. When we are being harsh to ourselves, when we are being critic to ourselves, it's like, go, you have to do this.
Endure the pain, yeah. No pain, no gain, we used to say.
Yes, and criticizing, like, you are wrong, you should have done better, you shouldn't have done that. So it's almost like if we separate from ourselves and we take the role of critic, in that way we don't even notice that we are suffering. So we use that like a way to alleviate our pain by becoming our own critics.
Mm-hmm.
But if we keep trapped in this circle, we cannot give the compassion we need and we cannot heal the way we need.
Excellent. So I'm also feeling like self-compassion takes some presence, some mindful awareness of what we're feeling and why. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely. It's being able to be present with whatever it is. It is without judging it. Just be there. Notice how does that feel in your body? Where do you feel it in your body? It's acknowledging, yes, this is a moment of suffering. Yeah. And she explained that, we have that reptilian brain that is the one that sparks the fight or flight, but we humans are basically mammals. And as mammals, we are born immature. So in order for us to develop or to achieve our full potential, we need warmth, we need touch, and we need soft vocalization. So sometimes people that think that if I'm harsh to myself, that is going to motivate me. Well, I can give you an example.
Okay.
So what if you have a son and your son failed a math test? He gets home and you start telling him, well, you're a failure, you're good for nothing. And you give him all these harsh words. Do you think he will be motivated to do better?
No, not at all.
Probably not. But what if you say, hey, man, I'm sure that hurt. Ooh, that was a bad grade. But you know what? I think all of us have received a grade like that some time. So you get better. And what can I do to help?
Mm.
Part is it's empathy.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are able to do the same for ourselves, that is going to motivate us because we actually do our best when we are in our optimal mind state, when we feel safe, when we feel comforted, not when we feel under attack.
That is very interesting because some folks think that we excel in moments of crisis. And so this is one of the, I believe, underlying reasons why we try to motivate ourselves through criticism is we're creating a crisis and then we have to respond heroically in some way. And it's just the opposite, you're saying. We actually function better and respond better when we're calm.
Yeah, and even during a crisis, yes, you can respond better when you internally feel that hey, I got this. Yes, this may be hard, but I think I can do it.
Mm, okay, so you're feeding yourself a positive reinforcement in your self-talk.
Yes, and even if I don't, I am there for me, to comfort me.
Okay, so if you're in a personal crisis, how can I apply self-compassion?
Okay, so that is a great question. Because you can actually take two roads. So the common road is saying, okay, so why is this happening to me? Why? And believe disconnecting yourself from the rest of humanity and thinking that something like that is happening only to you and you can fall in the self-pity part. The other part is saying, okay, yes, this is a moment of suffering. I am in a crisis and this is happening because I am human and I am here with me and I'm here for me. So I'm going to take care of myself. So I'm instead of saying why you did or why you didn't do whatever you did, is I'm going to feel whatever I'm feeling in this moment. I'm going to give myself compassion. And from that moment of total awareness and self-compassion, I will create an environment that it will be productive for healing, mm-hmm. and to create new ideas. For example, okay, so now I have this idea that I can do this move, that it will come instead of coming from fear and rushing and from this amygdala.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I am going to do it from a part of me that accepts completely whatever is happening, but has the possibility to think more clear and take better actions.
So it seems like it's starting with your inner environment that becomes more conducive to your healing. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, self-compassion is something that you give to yourself internally, taking care of that inner dialogue and basically treating yourself like if you were a friend that you care
Right. We talk about self-care a lot in ministerial training. They say you need to take care of yourself, but it doesn't mean just going to the spa and taking a day off and maybe going out with your friends and just relaxing. It's more of an inner process, isn't it?
Yes, and it could be all of that. Another of the misconceptions about self-compassion is that, oh, okay, so that is self-indulgent. So if I'm self-compassionate, so I will end up watching TV the whole day, eating a bucket of ice cream, or just spending my days and days without doing nothing. But it's actually the opposite, because, okay, so if you are your best friend, if you are somebody that you care for, are you going to recommend to do all those self-indulgent actions?
No, not at all.
Probably not. So why would you be doing that for yourself? You are somebody that care for yourself. So it's having the capacity to differentiate.
I can't say that word things. Either.
Yeah, so it's having that capacity of discernment, what is self-indulgent and what is actually taking care of yourself.
This is a great distinction, because I see in our society a lot of the effects of the self-esteem that we, you know, traditionally have embraced lead to a lot of self-indulgence and narcissism. And what you're saying is that we can break that cycle and really practice true self-love.
Self-compassion.
Yeah.
Yes, according to the research of Kristen Neff. And I have applied in my life and it has worked.
Excellent.
She has found that people that embrace self-compassion and practice self-compassion feel less depression, have a better feel of life, satisfaction, greater motivation, greater responsibility, better health choices, and overall better relationships.
That is fantastic. So if we want to be healthy and have amazing relationships and grow as human beings, it's a really good practice to have. Would you, in our last few minutes, could you maybe share a little bit of your practice of self-compassion? How can I practice this in my own life?
Absolutely. It's basically remembering the three components, the three steps. Okay, so
self-kindness.
Yes, self-kindness. Just keep in mind, is the way that you are talking to yourself, is that the same way you will talk to a good friend of yours that you really care and love? Is that the same or is not?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first red flag. So if it's not, just go ahead and just imagine that you are just your good friend.
So I want to stop there just for a second, because changing your self-talk, your inner dialogue, I've heard creates new neural pathways in your brain. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, it creates new neural pathways. And the next time it's going to be actually easier for you to do.
Oh, fantastic. What else?
So the second is, remember, whatever you are experiencing in this moment is because there is a common humanity. It's because you are a human. Because you are, as a human, you have imperfections, that your life doesn't have to be 100% perfect. That is impossible. So you shouldn't be judging yourself.
Yeah, give yourself a break.
Standard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. I'm going through this, and this is hard. And in that way, I'm connecting with humanity.
And you're not the only one that's going through this.
I'm not the only one. Yeah. A lot of people have gone through this too.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is mindfulness. So just notice, just go within, just acknowledge, validate whatever you're feeling. It's okay to feel that way, and accept that you are suffering, in order to give yourself the compassion you need.
Mm-hmm. And the thing you mentioned was creating an environment that's conducive to healing through all of these things, through your mindfulness practice, and maybe it would include all your spiritual practice, your meditation, your prayer time. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You can create all of this environment.
All right. So, Lily, I want to thank you for coming in today, and hopefully it's given us a little inspiration to be kinder to ourselves and to accept ourselves the way we are and to know how beautiful and magnificent each and every one of us is. From Unity on Cape Cod, I want to say thank you for joining us here today for
thank
a world
you.
Powerfully transformed. Thanks, Lily.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, each and every one, for tuning in to this special edition of A World Powerfully Transformed, a Unity on Cape Cod podcast. If you would like to support this program or find out more about Unity on Cape Cod and our Sunday services, please visit our website, unityoncapecod.org, or stop by our spiritual center at 147 Walton Ave in Hyannis, Mass. We would love to get to know you. Be blessed and remember to be a blessing. This podcast was made possible in part through a grant from Unity Worldwide Ministries and the Templeton Foundation.